Welcome to a special primary night edition of the Florida Roundup. Thanks for listening to Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. We are live for the hour tonight and taking your calls as the polls close. Of course, Florida voters did go to the polls today. Some over in the panhandle are still there in today's presidential primary election marked by fear over COVID-19. Now, Ohio was scheduled to hold its primary today as well, but it got postponed at the last minute because of concerns over public health. Before the polls even opened here in Florida this morning, nearly 2 million votes had already been cast around the state through early voting and vote by mail.
Scores of polling places were moved from nursing homes and assisted living centers across the state. 35, for instance, were moved in Miami-Dade County before today's opening of voting on this election day. More than a dozen were moved in Broward County. Of course, all of this was part of the effort to reduce the risk of spreading COVID-19. This is Governor Ron DeSantis Monday afternoon.
We're not going to panic. The fact of the matter is these things can be done in ways where you're not going to have large crowds, because it's one vote. For most counties, it's literally one oval that you're going to do.
Now, even before the COVID-19 crisis intensified, Florida voters in polls had been saying consistently that health care is the most important issue for them, especially the cost of health care and health insurance.
Kyle Frost. I live in Tallahassee, Florida, and I'm 25 years old. I would definitely say health care is one of the big ones for me. What comes out of the paycheck, I believe, is around $450 a month. We try to just avoid needing to go to the doctors, which is part of the problem, is we shouldn't have to think about that.
Phyllis Whitney is a retired CPA living in the Tampa area. Now, she's on Medicare, but she worries about health care and health care costs for her daughter and grandkids.
I have a daughter and grandchildren. And my daughter's on Obamacare. My grandchildren are on Medicaid. It's very hard to afford. My daughter's insurance is a high deductible insurance, and it's hard for her to pay the bills. I mean, she pays the premiums, and then she's still got to pay for the care. The insurance company hasn't covered a thing.
Anastasia Bizzari is a real estate agent in Seminole County. Now, she holds dual Italian and U.S. citizenship. She says she's skeptical that health care can be addressed without raising taxes.
So don't come up and tell me that my taxes are going to stay the same or that you're only taxing one class of citizens. This is a capitalistic society. So these plans that are like thrown in the world don't make sense, you know, because if you do a little math, you know that somebody needs to pay.
So tonight, on a special primary edition here of the Florida Roundup, what were the issues that determined your vote? Maybe you didn't vote today. Maybe you participated in early voting or vote by mail. Now, as you look ahead to November, Republicans and Democrats, we want to hear from you tonight. How will the threat and response to COVID-19 affect your vote in the months ahead? Now, did the virus affect your ability to cast your ballot? Maybe you were among those voters that saw your precinct move because it had been located in a nursing facility. 305-995-1800. Here live in the 7 o'clock hour on this primary night in Florida, our phone lines are open. 305-995-1800. Of course, we're on Twitter as well, at Florida Roundup.
Right now, we're pleased to welcome Mary Shedden, news director at WUSF in Tampa. She's been involved with I4Votes. That's a joint project with WUSF and WMFE in Orlando. Also with us, Mike Binder, who directs UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab in Jacksonville. Great to have you both on the show. Mary, let's start with you. As we just heard, Democratic primary voters say health care and health insurance are their top concern. And it's certainly one that has intensified as the state is now dealing with an emergency response to the spread of coronavirus. Tell us a little more about the feedback you got from voters with the I4Votes project.
Right. Thanks, Melissa. Well, the I-4 Votes Project was set up as a way to look at this incredibly powerful political snapshot of Florida and U.S., the I-4 corridor that runs from St. Petersburg all the way to Daytona Beach. We did a survey over about 4 months. It wasn't scientific. It was just saying, what do you think about issues? And as you heard these folks today, just a few moments ago, over and over again, healthcare came up as the top issue. The environment came in second, but healthcare, by far, without a doubt, was really important to voters, whether it was issues such as insurance or access to healthcare, but also a big issue is healthcare cost. How much is my prescription? How much are my prescription drugs? How much does my insurance premium cost? You heard that from those folks. Those over and over again, regardless of party, were the big issues.
And Mike Binder, against this backdrop, you polled voters through your polling lab at UNF. The numbers show Joe Biden easily beating Bernie Sanders tonight in Florida. Senior citizens are worried about health care, as Mary said. They're also now worried about getting sick from this virus, and they tend to vote in the highest numbers. Should we expect decreased turnout once all the votes are counted across the state today, given these fears?
Absolutely, I would expect some turnout decline for sure. But one thing that's always important to keep in mind, here in Florida, the bulk of our voting has already occurred prior to today. Democrats, over 1 million ballots had already been cast, either in person early or vote by mail. So yes, turnout would likely be impacted today, but over the last couple of weeks, things have been bumping along, and turnout actually has a pretty good chance to even hit 30% tonight.
Wow, interesting. And let's give a shout out to the poll workers around Florida, most of whom are senior citizens. We've heard reports of them showing up wearing gloves and handing out sanitizer to people who voted. Mary, you know, Ohio postponed its primary today. Florida and a couple of other states went ahead. How are we gauging the governor's approach to crisis management? He said, we're going to go ahead with this election. People even voted when the Civil War was raging, and that was part of his rationale not to cancel it. Or postpone
right.
it.
Well, we definitely saw a change in how people reacted when you're talking about elections. The election today in Pinellas County, more than 300 poll workers didn't show up. The county knew that yesterday. They did emergency training with employees, and so they were able to staff it. Does that speak directly to how the governor's responded? Not so much. Governor DeSantis is giving regular briefings. He's talking. He's getting the message out. But there have been a lot of questions in Florida, as well as nationwide, about testing, rolling that out. It looks like they're starting to get drive-through testing, starting in Broward County and expanding here in Tampa Bay, I know, in the next few days. The information coming out has been the real question about how the governor's been handling it. And I don't know if that affected the turnout today, but really the information has not been flowing from the Department of Health in a systematic way. And we're Floridians. We're used to those regular hurricane briefings. Yeah. We want a cone of uncertainty. we're used to getting information in a regular way. And it really hasn't rolled out. And this is unlike anything the Department of Health or any of us have seen.
Yeah,
unprecedented across the board, certainly, and unprecedented for voters to look for clarity and make choices in this environment. 305-995-1800. Polls in most of Florida closed 15 minutes ago. Still 45 minutes of voting left in the far western stretches of the Panhandle, the part of Florida that lives in the central time zone. Then we'll be able to start getting some of the statewide results. So you're not going to hear results on this program, and hey, that's okay, because we're more interested in hearing about the issues that help decide your vote. In Miami, we'll start with Robert on line four. Go ahead, Robert. You're on the radio.
Yeah, hi. I'm just calling. Just got laid up in relationship to the COVID-19. I work as a tour guide and in tourism, and basically I learned Thursday that I no longer have a job, permanently laid off. I voted recently. I voted early, actually. I always vote early. And I'm 63 years old. I voted for Bernie Sanders, so I'm kind of outside the age demographic of people who they and also African American. I voted for Bernie Sanders.
Hmm. Hmm. Robert, I'm sorry to hear about the employment. Thank you for sharing that personal story, Mary. I'm wondering, in your polling, which was focused on the Interstate 4 corridor, what role did jobs and the economy play? Certainly, it plays a role in healthcare and healthcare expenses. But as you spoke to voters anecdotally, how did they think about their economic prospects?
I think the big issues when it came to the pocketbook issues, it really was about healthcare, things like Social Security and Medicare. Really issues of wages, things like that, didn't hit the overall top five. But when you broke it down in terms of county by county or by political persuasion, then you would see a little more of the pocketbook issues come out. But jobs, really, when it comes to healthcare, I think healthcare and money are so synonymous and a big thing that's weighing on people's minds.
305-995-1800 to call us tonight on this primary night in Florida. As we talk about the balloting that went on today as scheduled, despite fears of coronavirus, and also the rapidly changing ground with the way the fears of this virus and the way states are responding to it, along with the federal government, has upended our whole society. Mike Bender, we just heard from that caller. He was laid off. We're going to be hearing a lot more of that in the coming weeks. As Mary said, jobs and the economy might not have been top of mind in the polling she did, but that could certainly change pretty soon. And how do you see that affecting the general election? We are assuming it will likely be Joe Biden as the nominee, although the votes aren't counted yet. As he looks ahead to the general election contest against President Trump.
So I think it's always important to understand polling and the context in which they occur. So the poll that we ran and came out just a week ago, less than a week ago, really, it came out on the 12th. It was a very different world than where we are today. And the way this has developed, not only day by day, but in many cases, hour by hour, absolutely any polling that was done on most important problem that occurred a week ago is really outdated and really just not particularly useful right now going forward. And absolutely what happens over the course of the next several months to this economy. And I fully expect a very, very bad outcome, at least in the short term, particularly just hearing from that one caller. You're going to be hearing many, many cases like that. This is going to be the driving argument and debate centered around this presidential election going forward. When the economy is humming along, people care about all kinds of other issues, the environment, education, healthcare. When the economy is in trouble and they can't put food on the table because they don't have a job, suddenly that becomes front of the line. And you're going to see this change as we begin to get polls out into the field in the coming weeks.
It has changed in stunning fashion and in speed, certainly, Mike. Robert in Tallahassee, you're up next on line five. Go ahead, Robert. You're on the radio now.
I really just wanted to say how my biggest thing was healthcare as well. I am a small business owner, and it doesn't get any smaller. I literally have one employee. We're in construction, and it would be great that he wouldn't have to go through the health care, Obamacare, and all of that, which I know he doesn't go to the doctor like he should. He's got a problem with his ankle, and it's a kid. He's 28 years old. He shouldn't have to worry about this, and I'm a little sad that it's taken so much, and this debate is still going on where every other country in the world can do this. Why can't we?
Sounds like, Robert, you endorse a Bernie Sanders-type healthcare approach.
I did. I do. Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren was close. She had a little bit more like, you know, I'll drag it out. I would have voted for either one of them. I would vote in a heartbeat for a ticket with both of them on it.
Hmm. Well, one of them was still on your ballot today, presumably, if you're a registered Democrat and you voted.
Oh, yeah. No, I totally voted. And I'm saying, like, in the general. In my perfect world, I would see a ticket with Warren Biden on it, Warren Sanders on it, not Biden. Yeah, I mean,
Robert,
I voted early, so like I voted for Bernie last week.
We hear you. Thank you, Robert, for sharing your story in Tallahassee. Mary, when you spoke with voters and they identified health care, we heard from some of them at the top of the program about Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, Medicaid. Did they offer up a path forward and the kind of solutions that they would like to see? A Medicare for All Sanders idea. Pete Buttigieg talked about a Medicare if you want it kind of plan. How did voters kind of come down on addressing the challenges that they're identifying?
I think a lot of the folks we spoke with are just as are probably more frustrated with how political leaders aren't coming up with solutions. I think that's part of the appeal of the Medicare for All. The woman you heard from earlier, Phyllis from Tampa, she said she doesn't have a political affiliation. She's never registered for a specific party. And she really thought the Republican Party was going to come up with some kind of solution that was even better than Obamacare. And she just said, I'm listening. I'm still waiting. I think that folks, that's what people were saying. That's what political leaders were elected to do. And they haven't come up with a plan. And there's a real frustration with that.
Yeah. And Mike Binder, your polling also showed another interesting motivation among Democratic voters. They're worried about their jobs. They're worried about health care. But voters who said they were choosing Joe Biden over Bernie Sanders said what drove them more than anything was that they were hoping to elect a candidate that they perceived could beat Donald Trump. That overrode the other concerns, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Almost 70% of our respondents, again, Democratic likely voters, indicated that they would prefer somebody that's best able to beat Donald Trump as opposed to somebody who maybe best represents their views. And I suspect in most cases there's a lot of overlap there. But just the idea that beating Donald Trump was such an important issue. And just to highlight that a little bit, when we ask the most important problem of the voters, we list about 8 topics, and then we say, oh, or is there something else? 14% of the voters volunteered Donald Trump as the most important problem facing America when they were not even given that as an option. He came in second place, ahead of the economy, ahead of healthcare. I'm not ahead of healthcare, ahead of the economy, ahead of the environment. That gives you a sense about where Democratic voters are on Donald Trump and beating him come November.
Well, that's remarkable. You didn't even ask that. They wrote it in, you're saying.
Yeah, they volunteered that. We give them a list of about 8 options, and they went and they said, or we say, or something else. And 14% said something else was Donald Trump.
We want to hear from you, Florida. What drove your vote today? It's a special live 1-hour edition of the Florida Roundup tonight across the state. As the primary has wrapped up in most parts of Florida, still some voters finishing up their balloting over in the Panhandle. Did you cast a ballot today? Were you worried about going to vote? Maybe concerned about going because of coronavirus? We want to hear from you. Get into the queue. Call us up at 305-995-1800. Tweets to @FloridaRoundup. After the break, we will continue with your calls and tweets and more guests, including South Florida's Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz will join us and others. It's your night to talk about the Florida primary here on the Florida Roundup. Keep listening and keep sending us those tweets. We are going to get a few of those on the air in just a minute, too. This is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Be right back. Welcome back to this special live election edition of the Florida Roundup as we cover today's Florida primary. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. It is primary night in the Sunshine State. The polls are closed in most of Florida and the peninsula. Only voters in the Western Panhandle in the Central Time Zone have about 35 minutes before the polls close. And after 8 o'clock Eastern is when we will start hearing about results in Florida. It's the biggest prize here tonight as two other states Illinois and Arizona are voting. Ohio was scheduled to vote, but called off or postponed its primary late last night. Obviously, a much different presidential primary here in Florida, Melissa, than it was just really a few weeks ago, right? Most notable, of course, is COVID-19. But also, it's a much narrower field of presidential hopefuls for Florida Democrats to vote on. Just Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, former Vice President Joe Biden remain strong in the race, along with Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard.
My name is Alex Erlenbach. I am an environmental engineer working for Broward County, and I live in Plantation, Florida. I am 28 years old.
My name is Daniela Ferreira from Miami, the southwestern part, Redlands area.
The issues I care most about are environmentalism and climate change and healthcare access for everyone.
You know, we can have all of these policy debates. We can have discussions and talk about our differences with regards to healthcare and education and climate change and sea level rise. But if we don't win elections, none of that matters.
I'm voting for Bernie Sanders specifically because I think that his platform is something that I align with most directly.
Step one is defeating Donald Trump, making sure that he's a one-term president. And I believe in my heart that that candidate is Joe Biden.
Florida voters sounding off tonight here on the Florida Roundup. We want to hear from you, Democrats. Who got your vote and why? Did you vote early? Did you vote today? For Republicans, which Democratic candidate do you want the president to face off with in November? What are the issues that are deciding your vote? Give us a call here on the Florida Roundup. It's 305-995-1800. Tweets to @FloridaRoundup. We're continuing our special coverage tonight as we welcome South Florida Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz, former chair of the Democratic National Committee. Congresswoman, it's a pleasure to have you on the Florida Roundup.
Oh, my pleasure to be with you. Thank you so much.
Now, you've endorsed Joe Biden for president, saying you believe he's the best candidate to lead this nation through challenging times. How do you see Vice President Biden, should he be elected, approaching the public health emergency we're dealing with right now? What makes him a better choice than either Bernie Sanders or President Trump?
Well, I think in this very difficult and uncertain time that we're living through right now, a worldwide public health crisis that has clearly caught President Trump flat-footed at best and at worst in complete and utter denial initially about the depth of the potential for people to become sickened and lives to be risked. Having Joe Biden as President of the United States, certainly were he president during this time, we would have had a steady hand on the tiller, someone who had the experience both with public health crises in the past, also in helping our country get out from under the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression with the 2008 Great Recession. Had we had him in place, he would have taken much more swift action. He would have made sure that we could engage in containment policies first to make sure that we could start to really flatten the curve, and then when we had to move to the mitigation social distancing point, we would flatten it even. Would have flattened it even further. But because we had a president who initially called it a hoax, and then subsequently, said this was well in hand and was going to be just like the flu, we wasted weeks of precious time. Now in Florida, we've just found out that kids are going to be out of school until at least April 15th. And, we're in a burgeoning crisis. And so making sure we have someone with the kind of experience and steady hand like Joe Biden, particularly in the aftermath, once we get out of this crisis and past the breaking point that we're in right now, having a president who knows what he's doing and that people trust is going to be incredibly important.
Now, looking past tonight's vote, tell us a little bit more about efforts in Congress to react to this crisis, in particular to funnel financial assistance to small business owners. There's talk of sending every American adult a $1,000 check. What do you believe is the correct approach of the Congress to deal with economic stimulus and also to work with health officials to get more testing kits out there and more respirators? That's a big concern as well.
Very big concern. And initially, the Democratic majority in the House of Representatives pushed through an $8.3 billion emergency supplemental appropriations bill. You know, the president initially was trying to just move money around, ask for less than $2 billion in new funding. So we were able to get $8.3 billion to make sure that we could jumpstart the research that's essential for us to eventually have a vaccine, but that's a year to a year and a half away before we have an effective vaccine that we know is safe. This package that we worked on at the end of last week that the House passed focused on Families First. The Families First Coronavirus Response Act makes sure that, A, testing is free for people who are indicated to need the test. The standards that are in place right now for who will need a test is specifically that if you have related travel and that you have symptoms, mm-hmm. or that you've been exposed to someone known to have coronavirus. So people shouldn't be just rushing out and trying to get a test just because they might have the sniffles, because we have to make sure that we have access to testing for people who really need it. But unfortunately, the administration wasn't prepared here either. There wasn't a quarterback, one person who was responsible for making sure that we had a process in place to ramp up quickly to get testing out there. Again, because the president unfortunately downplayed this crisis, I asked specifically last week in the Oversight Committee hearing, Dr. Redfield, the head of the CDC, who was in charge, he couldn't answer. And Dr. Fauci, you know, our world-renowned, respected public health expert, acknowledged that our system just wasn't designed for a pandemic, a national pandemic like this. So we're behind the eight ball. And so we need to make sure that we get those testing sites ramped up, that we're going to have a rapid test developed that's in development now that will be available in the next few weeks. And Congress is going to need to focus next after the free testing that we passed, also that we provided 14 days of paid sick leave to about 90 million people and paid family and medical leave to the same population, as well as robust unemployment insurance coverage. Those are really critical things, including the SNAP benefits and nutrition benefits and food benefits for seniors. The Senate hasn't passed that bill yet, though, and we're going to need to, we're already working on the next package. The next package will need to be broader economic assistance that, Congress will just be discussing over the next few days.
Right. Unprecedented levels of assistance we're hearing about. There have been comparisons in the last day or two that we could be looking potentially at an economic slowdown that we haven't seen since 2008, 2009. Is that a concern you have?
A very grave concern. And again, you know, one made much more likely by the slowness of the response and the dithering that this administration and this president engaged in when we could have jumped on this immediately. So, you know, obviously, we have to deal the hand that's been dealt, play the hand that's been dealt us, and thankfully we're on top of it now. Congress didn't sit idly by and wait for the president to realize how grave this crisis was. If you remember, when we passed the stimulus package during the Great Recession, you know, I think this will be akin to something like that. That was about $787 billion, the Economic Recovery and Reinvestment Act. I'm not sure what level this will reach. It could be even more significant than that. But obviously, we are going to have to put an infusion of dollars into the economy for people who are lower income, for people who are going to be affected the most significantly and immediately, who are losing their jobs and who are going to have a gap in their income. You put those kinds of dollars into people's hands that are going to spend that money, as opposed to wealthier, more successful people or corporations who are just going to sit on it, and you really directly have an impact on our economy. And that's what we're going to need to do. It's going to be very important to do that.
Well, we appreciate your time tonight on this election night in Florida. Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz, thank you for joining the Florida Roundup.
David Bergstein is one of the people who is responsible for taking a look at the Democratic National Committee and Democrats running in battleground states, including Florida. David is with us now via FaceTime. Welcome to the Florida Roundup here, David. Thanks for your time. How do Democrats message healthcare reform and the economy, considering how fast things are evolving with the response to COVID-19?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm also a former Florida Democratic Party spokesman, so I'm always happy to talk to folks in Florida.
Welcome back to the Sunshine State then, David.
Always happy to chat with folks. So I think what you're seeing right now is obviously everyone in the Democratic Party, our primary concern is the health and safety of every individual in America. But the crisis has also reinforced the importance of healthcare in this year's election. You know, there is a very stark contrast between the Republican Party under Donald Trump, which has pursued an agenda that is increasing healthcare costs. It's pursued an agenda that is jeopardizing coverage protections for people with pre-existing conditions. And the Democrats, who are working to protect healthcare for every American, to lower costs, to increase the availability of coverage. And I think that, you know, moments like this certainly clarify or heighten the focus on that issue for voters, both in Florida and across the country.
Regarding healthcare, one of the Democrats still on the ballot and still in the race, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, has talked about, you know, a Medicare for all, obviously. Senator Sanders also has had a very tough time finding support among some Hispanic voters in Florida because of their personal experience with socialism in Cuba and Venezuela and elsewhere. How will the Democratic National Committee address this in a general election? Even if Sanders isn't on the ticket, that is still kind of in the environment and certainly likely to be used by the president during his reelection efforts.
Yeah, so, you know, we're neutral in terms of the primary contest. We're not supporting any candidate in the race.
I understand what that. I guess what I'm asking is how will the DNC address the Democratic socialism that is in the environment for Democrats, particularly among Cuban voters, among Venezuelan American voters, among Hispanic voters in Florida?
Well, I would say, you know, one of the lessons that Democrats both in Florida as well as nationally have learned is that we need to invest, particularly in our communication and outreach to Florida's diverse and terrific Latino community, way earlier than we have been in previous cycles. Like I said, I'm a former FDP spokesman. I worked there in 2012. I remember, you know, the programs that we had to be in South Florida, to be in Broward County, to be in Orlando and Tampa, talking to the diverse constituencies and different parts of the Latino community very early in the cycle in 2012. And we've honestly, we've let that lapse over several cycles. But this cycle, I am very proud to say that Florida is one of the states that the DNC has invested in very early. We have, in partnership with the Florida Democrats, 100 campaign staff on the ground already. We have staffers right now organizing Spanish language communities, making sure that voters know the truth about our candidates. And that early investment, I think, is going to help push back against some of those lies.
David, real quick, in our final question, we just have seconds left, and I know that you're not going to pick a side, but if the vice president, former Vice President Biden, has a decisive victory here in Florida tonight, is it over for Senator Sanders?
Well, so after tonight, about 60% of the delegates will be allocated. There's obviously still some more to go, but I'll leave it to others to make decisions about their campaign.
Okay.
We're preparing for the general.
Fair enough. David Bergstein with us here via FaceTime. He is with the Democratic National Committee. Thanks, David. You are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
And we're continuing our special coverage on this primary election night here in Florida as we welcome Terry Rizzo, chair of the Florida Democratic Party. Terry, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here with you.
So the primary went ahead today. Ohio decided to postpone, but voters turned out today. And Florida Democrats were trying to get the state to release lists of polling places that had been relocated in recent days due to coronavirus. A lawsuit was even filed over this. Did you have a concern that some voters had trouble today accessing the chance to cast a ballot in light of the crisis the state is dealing with?
Well, there certainly was some confusion, and some voters were unable to or had difficulty in accessing their voting places. Generally speaking, across the state, much of the voting went fairly smoothly, but we do have those concerns, and that needs to be addressed going forward into future elections.
And as we look ahead to the November election, what changes or new best practices do you feel, as chair of the Florida Democratic Party, should be undertaken to make sure that everyone is able to vote. We hope that by November we won't have this concern about the spread of the virus. But it's certainly impossible to predict that with 100% certainty. What are you hoping to see?
Well, I agree with you. It is unpredictable, and we don't know. This is Florida, for heaven's sake. And we always have the unknown unknowns. Whoever would have thought a month ago that we would be here in the midst of a pandemic dealing with voting? But we've been through this before. There was Hurricane Michael in 2018 that hit the panhandle, and there have been other natural disasters and other events that have affected voting. So I think that we need to take this into consideration and look for ways that enhance voting and expand voting going forward, and in particular, vote by mail. Voting by mail is safe and secure. People can do it from the safety of their homes. And I think we need to look for ways to expand vote by mail statewide. And I would call actually for a special session of the legislature to address this issue and to expand vote by mail. I also would suggest expanding the date by which vote by mail ballots could be received, much the way that the military overseas ballots are received, as long as the ballots are postmarked by Election Day. So I think we need to be open to all of the ways that will enhance voting in a safe and secure way going forward, with first and foremost the safety of our citizens and our voters in mind.
We want you to stick around, Terry. We're going to take a break, but keep talking about Florida election issues here on the show. If you're just tuning in, it's a special live one-hour edition, evening edition, of the Florida Roundup as we cover the state primary today. Almost 2 million of you voted earlier by mail, as Terry said. Lots of Floridians like to vote by mail, but a lot of you came out and cast a ballot today, and they are actually still voting in the Florida Panhandle right now. We want to hear from you. Let us know your thoughts about the election and also how coronavirus has affected our politics and is going to affect our state economy. There is still so much to get into. 305-995-1800. We'll get to your calls after the break. This is the Florida Roundup, and we want your tweets as well. We continue to get tweets from all of you. If you can't call us on the phone, just shoot us a tweet at Florida Roundup. People have a lot to say about this election. Healthcare. Maybe you've been laid off from a job due to the spread of coronavirus. We've been hearing from you about that tonight. What are your thoughts? Just join us here on the show. It's been a really crazy week, and there's a lot more news still to discuss. This is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to a special primary night edition here at the Florida Roundup. Polls have been closed for 46 minutes in the peninsula, but the western stretch of the panhandle still voting for another 14 minutes before statewide election results on this presidential preference primary begin to be released. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Let's go to some of your calls. Did you vote today? Maybe you voted early. What are your thoughts about the presidential election? 305-995-1800. Cam is on the line in Sunrise, Florida. Hi, Cam. You're on the air tonight. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I was just calling in to I guess I saw on Twitter that Congresswoman Wasserman Schultz was saying that Joe Biden would be able to lead this crisis well, but his campaign and the DNC have both been contradicting CDC advice these last couple of days and not pushing our governor to actually extend voting. That's just very confusing to me. It doesn't seem to me like that is the kind of person that you would want in a crisis if he's ignoring expert advice.
Okay, thanks for that. So not sold on Joe Biden. Terry Rizzo, chair of the Florida Democratic Party. While Joe Biden is favored to win the state, there is a sizable minority of voters out there expected to cast a ballot for Senator Bernie Sanders. And how do you unite this party going forward into November, as we are hearing from some callers, they're not all on the same page about these candidates.
I think moving forward, we will get closer to be together because we all are united in our desire to replace Donald Trump. And in terms of the crisis of leadership that he has exhibited time and time again. And as we go forward, all of our candidates and all of our voters are united in this, and I should say strongly. The fact that we had Democrats turning out, determined to vote in the middle of the coronavirus crisis, is an indication of this. Sanders supporters and Biden supporters are united in our desire to do this. I think our programs, our head and our candidates are head and shoulders above the leadership of Donald Trump. I think he is, as we've seen, this is Exhibit A of his continued ineptitude on health care. He's delayed, denied, and distorted the facts on coronavirus since the beginning. We are now several months down the road since this has started and just now beginning to take action. And we need a leader who can lead the country in a safe and stable and secure way. Now,
Terry, hold on the line. We're going to take another call here from Orange Park. Nancy has been holding on patiently. Go ahead, Nancy. You're on the radio now.
Hi, I'm 68 years old. I have heart and kidney disease. I have symptoms of Parkinson's. I have PTS, anxiety, and I'm bipolar. I have not been outside of my condo since March 1st. I always vote on the day of the election, and I couldn't go out today because of fear of getting the virus. And this is very important to me to vote, because so far your callers have been saying Bernie, and you know, it scares me.
Scared of the candidate of Senator Sanders?
Yes, it does, because I don't think that he's qualified. I think he's too radical. I don't think that anyone could have gotten medical care for all. Everyone wishes that could be so, but that's not realistic. And Joe Biden, he's just got a more level head on him, and it's just, but you know.
Nancy, we hear you. I appreciate you sharing your story with us. Take care of yourself, okay? Be safe, and hopefully your neighbors can check on you while still respecting social distancing here.
Yes, right.
Find our way through.
Gosh, that shows you how much anxiety a lot of folks out there have right now, Tom. She says she hasn't left her house since March 1.
Yeah. And the difficulty in voting of somebody, Terry, who has been prideful about voting on Election Day. And as we move toward that general election, you're calling for, I mean, how long would you like to see Florida be able to vote before Election Day on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November? When would you like early voting to begin?
Well, I think that's something that needs to be addressed. I think the earlier, the better. I think by extending voting as long as possible, and extending vote by mail and early voting options for people like Nancy. And you're right, the anxiety is really real. And people are very worried and very concerned going forward, and that's why we need a leader who can lead the charge and help us with this situation. And Donald Trump in healthcare has proven that he has not been capable of this. Healthcare was the number one issue on voters' minds before this the coronavirus, and this is now Exhibit A of further ineptitude and incompetence. That is so sad. That we have to address it in this manner. And that is one reason why we need to replace him this November.
What we should note, Terry has a point of view, certainly. She is the chair of the Florida Democratic Party. And we appreciate you appearing tonight, Terry. Thanks for your time with us.
Thank you very much.
Speaking of point of views, from the other side of the aisle, how about that? Let's hear from Joe Gruters, a state senator who is also the chairman of the Republican Party of Florida. Senator Gruters, welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Nice to have you on this this evening. Appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate you having me on. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing from Terry there, where she is way off the mark. I mean, because it's the president who has made this testing for free. He's waiving all types of fees. He's doing everything he can to get out in front of this, and this should not be a political issue. This should be as mankind, how can we come together as a country to make sure that we all can get past this and survive and do well? But to politicize it and attack the president is completely off base.
Senator Gruters, though, the criticism has been that the president downplayed the seriousness of the coronavirus for a number of days, if not a number of weeks, downplayed the severity of this disease and the public health threat that it presented for a good number of days or weeks, that public health officials, even the National Institutes of Health, has called the public health care system flat-footed and unprepared for this.
I think that I think we're fortunate to have a president that closed down travel to China when he did, that closed down Europe when he did. It was the liberals that attacked him for doing that. It's called an overreaction. I'm glad that we have somebody with a calm and steady hand leading the charge on this, because this is when you think about what's happening all across the country, the closure of the restaurants here in Florida, the bars and everything else. This is completely unexpected. Nobody could be 100% prepared for this. But what we have to do is we have to make the right decisions, and we have to listen. Florida is resilient. I'm glad we have a governor and Ron DeSantis and a president like Donald Trump in charge, and because I think they're calm and collected, and they're doing the right things. And it's and you're going to get criticized no matter what you do, but I think they're doing a good job.
Senator Gruz, let me ask you, the president early in his administration did disband the Global Pandemic Office of the administration, and that has been pointed to as a place that could have been helpful, would have been helpful, given what we've experienced in the last 6 weeks or so.
No, what's happening is under the Obama administration, what they did is they were adding social engineering and other non-the related issues to the office, and so I don't agree with that. I think that the president's done a good job.
Why not put guardrails on the office instead of just disbanding it altogether?
That's what they should. You know, maybe that's what they should. And it's hard to look back and say do this, do that. But when you have a certain purpose and you're completely going the other way and you're making it political in nature, that's when it's wrong. With issues like this, transcend politics, that transcends parties. We have to do what's the best interest of the entire country. We have to stop making this political. We have to bring everybody together. And listen, you could point fingers all you want, but that's not going to solve the issue that we're in. We have to figure out a way to survive, number one, to help our communities be prepared. And we have to figure out a way we're going to help people survive the economic downturn.
Senator Gruters, I'm going to plead guilty to making this about politics. It is primary night, after all, here in Florida, as we're talking, the presidential preference primary. The president is on the ballot for Florida Republicans, coming at a time when most of the stock market gains is one barometer that the president likes to look at. During his administration, those have been wiped out. How does he campaign in this kind of economic climate? And ask voters to reelect him?
Well, listen, I think that what you're seeing out of China and South Korea, I don't necessarily trust everything that's coming out of China, but certainly
I'm talking about what's coming out of Wall Street, what's coming out of the stock exchanges.
No, exactly right. But what you're seeing out of those countries is you're seeing the curve end up coming back. And so as a result, what's going to happen is America will experience the same thing. And I think our economy, the stock market, everything else, I think it will come roaring back just like it did. And the reason why it's been able to go down a third over the last month,
this crisis, mm-hmm.
it's gone up a third or more than that since he's been president because of the what he's been able to do for the economy.
Right. So the Trump gains are off by 85%. That's right.
There's no question. But as a result, there's nobody that knows the economy better than a businessman. He's going to get us right back once we're past all this. But listen, it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. So
Senator,
whatever gains are left, they're going to be gone.
We've got to leave it there on that down note, that very sobering note. Senator Joe Gruters, state senator and chairman of the Republican Party of Florida. Nice to have you on the program again, sir. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
The returns, results here, Melissa, just a few moments
That's
away
right.
before the early returns here will be coming in on this special primary night. The program here is produced by WJCT's Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN in Miami. Heather Schatz and Denise Royal are our producers.
Jason Zabka is WLRN's Director of Radio Programming. Technical Director, Director of Radio Ops is Peter Mertz. Doug Peterson, Charles Michael, and Brady Corum with engineering help. And our theme song by Aaron Libos of AaronLibos.com. I'm Melissa Ross, and thanks for being with us tonight. What a night it's been, Tom, on this primary evening.
Indeed it has. Sorry we could not get to all the phone calls and tweets. We do appreciate it. We'll be back Friday at noon on this Florida Public Radio station. I'm Tom Hudson. Have a safe evening.